This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. And we are excited to announce that there is a replacement for the retiring David Letterman.
I apologize. I'm accountable to you for fixing these problems. And I'm committed to earning your confidence back by fixing the site.
That's right. Kathleen Sebelius is leaving the Department of Health and Human Services after the Obamacare website fiasco to maybe, say, do a real comedy show on CBS. I guess Stephen Colbert might be available.
No one has signed up for Obamacare, give or take 4.2 million people. And our president has gotten so desperate that he appeared on this website, Funny or Die. By the way, Funny or Die is also the ultimatum you get from Obama's death panel.
And that must mean Stephen Colbert from Comedy Central is going to HHS just in time. And if you believe that, I promise we'll sort all of this out later this hour. We'll also explore just how encrypted you need to be when your own computer software can give away your passwords. Also, actor Colin Firth will be with us this hour to talk about his role playing a man who had a chance to settle a score with his World War II torturer and found forgiveness instead.
It's very difficult for me to comprehend. I've never experienced that kind of brutality. I've never experienced captivity. I've never been in the presence of someone who wants to degrade me comprehensively.
That conversation coming up later this hour, but we begin with some thoughts on the 50-year commemorations of the Civil Rights Act.
Today, we remain locked in the same great debate about equality and opportunity and the role of government in ensuring each.
President Barack Obama, this country's first African-American president, speaking yesterday at the Civil Rights Summit in Austin, Texas, at the LBJ Library. But here's something that there's not much of a debate over right now.
We have the biggest prison population in the history of prison populations, right, on the one hand. And on the other hand, we have this epidemic of white-collar crime that is worsening rapidly. And maybe one day we all wake up and realize how unfair it is, and that could be a serious problem in this country.
Journalist Matt Taibbi said that on this program earlier this week, and it goes right along with this fact we will explore in just a moment with journalist Jeffrey Toobin.
Every single inmate is black. Not most of them, not a lot of them, every single one.
All black prisons. That's what Jeffrey Toobin is talking about. They're a facility in Baltimore, Maryland. But in a rising prison and parole population, quadrupling since 1980, breaking all records in the history of civilization, the correction system in America is probably the biggest example of how in certain areas civil rights have not advanced in the past 50 years. The overrepresentation of African-American males in the prison population in racially segregated facilities is a feature of American life today that would shock Lyndon Johnson if he were alive today. Joining me now in the studio is Michael Jacobson, director of the CUNY Institute for State and Local Governance and professor in the sociology department at CUNY Graduate Center. He's also a former New York City Corrections and Probations Commissioner. Michael, welcome.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
How much does the prison system in this city, in cities across America, represent a complete besmirchment of the notion of civil rights in America?
Well, as one of the clips you ran made clear, the prison and jail systems are overwhelmingly, disproportionately, people of color, right? They don't look like the states or cities that they're in. And that's been true in the U.S. for about the last 40 years or so, even more so as we've ramped up our system from having about 200,000 to 300,000 people in jail and prisons to 2.3 million people in jails and prisons today.
And part of that is a function of American politicians thinking that prisons are the solution for everything, and also the decline in mental health services, a whole series of declines in the justice system that have produced this explosion in the prison population.
Correct. It's the coming together of several sort of structural issues, sort of tough on crime environment, a sort of war on the urban poor, the drug war. All these things have combined to allow politicians to get sort of cheap political capital by becoming tougher and tougher on crime, longer and longer sentences, putting people in jail and prison for less and less serious crimes. And you add all that up cumulatively and you have what we have, which is 5% of the world's population and 25% of the world's prisoners.
Which is shocking for America's first African-American president to be presiding over.
Right.
And is this a system that can't be turned around, or do you believe the administration has chosen not to address it because it's too politically sensitive?
No, I think it can be turned around. And if you've been listening to Attorney General Holder the last couple of years, he's really sort of ramped up his comments on prisons generally, the disproportionality in prisons,
mandatory minimum sentences.
So the good news, there's not much good news here, but the good news here is that for the first time in 40 years, in the last 3 years, have seen declines in the number of people in state prisons. And a number of things have caused that, but essentially what's happening now in states is that they're all coming to the realization one way or another that these systems are too big, their scale is too unaffordable, there's too much anger about it, and there's so much research that shows it's ineffective and doesn't work that policymakers, and even very conservative policymakers, have become sort of more enlightened about the need to downsize these systems.
Will they take action, though? I mean, you heard all this rhetoric at the Civil Rights Summit down in Austin, Texas, saying there's more work to be done, we need to do more work. Right. But in fact, the Civil Rights Act was passed in a moment of crisis in America. And if you look at these numbers in the prison system, this is a moment of crisis.
No, that's correct. You know, the question of will they take action, you know, if you look at Texas, 3, maybe 4 years ago now, passed the most sweeping prison reform legislation of any state in the last 40 years. And no one would have predicted that, right? And they did it because of a coming together of all these sort of structural issues. It's too big. Texas can't afford it. They have too many other problems in their health and education system. And even in a bipartisan way, they made a very conscious effort to take money out of their prison systems, about $500 million, and reinvest a lot of it in rehabilitation and community programs. There's a ton of more work to do in Texas. I don't want to be sort of overly sanguine about what they did, but it was sort of symbolic that even a state like that is now sort of ready or at some level of a sort of precipice to make some reform. So I do think we're at a moment. The question is, can we take advantage of the moment to do some really serious reforms to drive down our rates of incarceration similar to those of other Western European countries, which are all about one-fifth of ours, give or take?
Michael Jacobson is director of the CUNY Institute for State and Local Governance. He's a professor in the sociology department at CUNY Graduate Center and a former New York City Corrections and Probations Commissioner. Thanks so much.
Sure. Thanks for having me.